Jana Tara Begum, and I work in Operation Unite, and you're tuned to 90.7 FM WGXC, ACRA.
Well, hello there. I am Neva Wartell, host of Music for the Masses, inviting you to join me every Sunday from 1 to 3 in the afternoon on an excursion of sound and rhythm, where we discover how much amazing music comes from places in the world you may be familiar with, or you've wondered about, or maybe never even heard of. Music for the Masses comes to you live from Catskill every Sunday from 1 to 3 p.m. only on listener-supported, solar-powered, community-based radio for open ears, open minds, and open hearts. 90.7 FM and WGXC.org. Suitable for the avid globehopper and armchair traveler alike. You might want to pack a map and a sandwich.
WGXC underwriting is provided in part by Upstate Films, a nonprofit theater presenting Sonic Wave, an ongoing music and sound-rich series screening in a new Atmos theater at the Orpheum in Saugerties every Monday night. This month, some of the films playing include Bjork, Cornucopia, The Replacements, Color Me Impressed, and Hello, My Name is Blotto. Information about screenings and special guests at upstatefilms.org.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Mary Jo Downing of Hudson, New York. WGXC supporters care deeply about creative community radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
Hey, I'm Rob Lumberg, host of Uncontaminated Sound. Today I bring you my friend and local artist from Hudson, Phil Gebhardt. Phil, welcome to the show.
Hey, Rob. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Of course, of course. Where to begin? I mean, with Uncontaminated Sound, I love to talk arts, journeys, just the journey into your creative path. So, Phil, first of all, though, I refresh my memory. How did we get to know each other? I moved to Hudson area last year, so please, I refresh my memory. How did we link up?
I think I got an email from you one day because you ran into a studio mate of mine who you met, and he passed my info along to you. So I got an email from you about connecting and talking about art and, you know, building on from there.
Oh, yes, yeah. Yeah. I believe it was a local artist when I was just new in town, where it was just a fascinating feel to the town of, you know, Hudson's really a interesting vibe. And I went into a roastery, I think, and I met a local artist who was connected with yourself, and he gave me your info, and I always, of course, love talking to artists, and I love talking art, and just being in the scene. So I think that's how we connected. And then, of course, as one of my great passions is to have coffee and have discussions, of course. So I think that's how it kicked it off. And then it's developed from there. And it's been a pleasure getting to know you and talk about art. So on that note, where do we begin? Where does your journey begin into becoming a visual artist? You're from New York, born and bred, correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Whereabouts?
Putnam County.
Oh, yeah? So what part in Putnam County? I'm unfamiliar. I'm a guy from Mass, so.
Okay, well, Putnam County is a pretty small county, so if you go 15 minutes in each direction, you're in a different county. So it's about 50 miles from New York City.
Okay, okay. And when you were growing up, did you always want to be a visual artist? Did you want to be a painter, artist, or did you have some other aspirations?
Yeah, from a very young age, I was really interested in creating art. I got into it early, probably first grade, I'd say. I had some really good art teachers when I was young, and they exposed me to, you know, my creative side. And I think I remember my mom saying that I came home after school one day. I was in first grade and said, you know, I want to be an artist. So it was always my thing in school. I continued doing it. It was my main interest. So it's remained the same since then.
Okay. Well, did you study arts in undergrad?
Yeah, I did. I was a fine art major, and I also played sports, so I didn't go to an art school, so I balanced both at the same time, and I had my BFA in fine arts, and I then went into art teaching after that.
Did you say you attended SVA in the city, or was that grad school?
That was grad school. That was for my art teaching master's.
Okay. What really inspired you, like going to SVA, or what inspired you to go the teaching route comparatively to, say, a deeper MFA or studio kind of program comparatively to like a teaching side of things?
Well, I saw teaching as an avenue to, you know, have a career but also continue to make art. I also did some teaching before I went to grad school. The year after I graduated college, I spent a year at home, and I spent the whole year substitute teaching in the district to see if it was a good fit for me and if I could handle it. And I enjoyed it. I like working with young people. I like exposing them to art. Yeah, I thought it was a good fit. So I looked for some schools that fit the bill.
Now, during that time, I know it's hard balancing, a career, a 9-to-5 or proverbial 9-to-5 or a day job. And then when did you kind of slate out the time to work on your personal stuff or your actual fine art painting stuff? Or how did you balance that in the early days comparatively to now? I'll definitely ask about what you're working on now in the last few years. But I'm curious how you balance that out, like, did you start fleshing out a breadth of work while teaching?
Yeah, I think it comes in waves. So you get this urge to create and you put some time aside to start. You start making some work, but then things get in the way and unfortunately you have to put it to the side. So it kind of came in cycles. So, you know, I was able to produce some work, take a break, produce some more work. So it lacked some consistency, and I was always experimenting with different things. So I was trying to find that specific style I was looking for.
So in the early days as an artist or a visual artist, or I guess any artist from different mediums, right? One must explore to figure out what the language will be later on, correct?
Yeah.
So how did you do so? I'm curious about, like, what were you doing, like, to experiment in what mediums and what processes were you into to get to the language you have now?
Well, I enjoy a lot of different mediums. whether it's painting, photography, sculpture, ceramics. Painting would be the thing I enjoy the most. As far as how to paint, you know, when you are younger or you're just getting out of school, you have this, maybe this, I did at least, this urge to be really technically sound and improve your skills like that. So a lot of the things I did after I got out of college, I was just trying to do some realism and try to improve my technical skills. Really work from a source, copy a picture, build upon there. And the more you work with mediums, the more you find that you like to handle them in a different way, and that could always lead to something new.
Yeah. And now, did you have a studio in the city ever, or were you always upstate in this area?
I had a studio space for about a year in Long Island City.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able to produce a good amount of work there.
Now, with being in the city at that time, did you find a certain energy comparatively to up here? Or is it more introspective kind of being up here comparatively to the city? Like, for myself, I've always driven, I've derived my stuff from energy, and the cities really did it for me. Like, and kind of coming up here, I became introspective and kind of did a lot of painting during that time because I was really introspective. But I really feed off of energy and dynamics of the living, working system that is New York City. So I'm curious if you found that in Long Island City, or you found a different energy here than comparatively to LIC.
Well, I definitely think there's a certain energy in New York City that's uncomparable.
Yeah.
You know, and I was also much younger. So, you know, you're immersed in this. It energizes you. I think one of the big things that I was really interested in was some of the street art that you saw in New York City. And I was living in the East Village and also was around the Lower East Side a lot. And there's just so much street art, so many different styles, so many different artists that you could find. So I got really into that, and it's inspiring. And I think also some of my work is rooted in that too. You know, there's a rawness. There's these pieces are out in the elements. They're changing constantly. So I really like that.
Now, have you taken that and placed it into your current stuff? Like, did that translate to the years that followed into your visual studies?
Are you saying street art specifically?
Or just the influences by that year into what has developed over, you know, the past several years?
Yeah, I think over the past several years, I kind of took some things that I was really into years ago. I think the thing I like about street art is it's very variable. There's so much out there, and it's very raw, and I like that. It's inspiring.
I'm on the similar kind of stylistically frame of mind as well, just being raw expressionist. Just really, you can tell that raw style and the roughness of a piece or paintings or anything that's pure emotion, which I love about just pure expressionism or pure neo-expressionism or just and that's how I go, obviously. You've seen my stuff where it's just raw experimental stuff, and you know, I don't overthink. It's just purity from the subconscious. Do you approach your current piece is like that now, or do you have like a methodical process when you're thinking of a new piece? How do you go about a new piece? Like, can you talk about your process when you approach a new body of work or new breath of work?
Yeah, I think it's really spontaneous. I try to keep it that way. I don't go into things with a certain an end game. I rarely use like pictures or resources to help drive my work. So I usually go into it and it's a lot of mark making, and the composition kind of builds from there. And I think a lot of it is also working with different mediums and knowing what the mediums will do on the surface. And there's so many different things you could do, and I think that depends on how I'm feeling that day and what I want to do. So I don't stick to a certain method, but sometimes I find myself going down a road where I do some, I can't say specific techniques, but I'm using certain things I'm comfortable with, and I might stick with that, if that makes sense.
Oh, yes. No, of course. It's, creating a breadth of work that's, you create a visual language and you have a process that it's tested by yourself over time, and that the output is what you like due to those years of trial and error and testing methodologies out. You find that, and you go along with that process and create this breadth of work. So, speaking of the breadth of work, and I don't mean to get too technical to our listeners here. I love to find more about yourself, Phil, beyond art. But I know you have a show kind of coming up on in Hudson at TSL. That's June 28th, I believe, right?
Yeah, it's June 28th from 6 to 8. I believe that's a Saturday.
Oh, yes. But the time and info is, that's good. I'm curious about the breadth of work. What are you showing? And what's the show about? And what's it mean to you to have this type of show in such a venue?
Well, the work in the show is work I've been doing over the past 3 years. The main attraction, I would say, is some large scale pieces that I really am not able to show in some regular venues. So those are going to be on display. They have a totally different feel to it. The space is great to be able to take those in. So I'm really excited about that. There will be other work that I've done that's, I wouldn't say it's smaller, but it is on a smaller scale, a little more figurative. So there's a combination of this figurative and this landscape vibe that's not overly defined. It's suggestive. You'll have to come check it out.
And it's called About... Oh, no. I was about to read the text you sent me.
It's called, Beyond Form.
Yeah, Beyond Form.
Okay.
But...
that's kind of referring to my work isn't, like I said before, I'm not looking for that end result when I start. So if you're seeing a specific form or object or something come about in the work, that really wasn't how I began it. And it's more about process. So there's an underlying element to it. And some of the work on display is some of those first stages, and others are a third or fourth or fifth stage, and they tend to build up and get a little more technical as that goes on. And I guess that's kind of why I brought up the street art before, is, you know, there's that raw element that that you see, but then there's also some things that get tightened up that require a little more attention to detail.
So what are your biggest pieces regarding scale? I have an inclination, because I've visited your studio and I've seen some bigger pieces and some rolled up. Not just on spec, but in regarding the scale and inquiry about the size of a piece, but what's the difference in process of creating, say, a wall-sized piece comparatively to a larger kind of muralistic piece. Is there a difference in your thinking or way of thought, and why create that a piece on that type of scale?
Okay, well, yeah, the pieces are fairly large. I just want to talk about the scale of them. One of them, probably the largest one, is 7 feet by 12 feet. Others are 4 to 7 feet tall by anywhere from eight feet wide. So they're mostly in a landscape format. And yeah, there's a major difference between working on a piece like that than working on, let's just say, 40 by 30. And I think it's because you're like inside the piece. And the way it starts is it's a much more, how do I explain this? You know, you're not really being so technical. You're able to be really loose and use your body. And there's a lot of movement involved that you can't do on a smaller piece.
So a lot of gestural, full body movements to the painting comparatively to maybe, say, just strictly hand movements with the brush or brush strokes or movements with the said medium you're using to a smaller piece. With the bigger canvas or the bigger piece, it seems like, yeah, it's more performative as well.
Absolutely.
But you're using your entire energy, your being into, and you're putting it actually into the piece.
Right.
Am I not?
No, you're 100% correct. Like some of the hand motions you were doing that our viewers can't see, a little bit more from the elbow on a smaller piece, where a large piece, you know, you're using your full arm, you have to bend, you have to reach, you have to stretch. So it's, yeah, it's a totally different feel.
But with the bigger pieces, what are you trying to communicate, I guess? Like, or what are you trying to express through from yourself to the canvas on the bigger pieces? Is there something there where you're like, I need to express myself on the larger scale?
Yeah, I think that's part of my creative process that I really enjoy. A larger scale allows me to kind of let loose. And like I said, you're kind of inside of the work rather than it's a smaller piece in front of you. It's just very expressive. I think what I'm trying to elicit is emotion, recollection for people. It doesn't need to be specific, but I'd like a viewer to see it and, you know, be affected by it in some way where it reminds them of something, so they can connect to it personally. But it doesn't need to be what I was trying to do.
Of course. Now, I mean, once the art is out there, right? Once art is out there, it's always interpretive to the viewer. So the art, the eyes outside of the artist, right? It's, once you put art out to the public, it's up to the public to judge, correct?
Correct.
That's the weird thing about art. Once you put it out, you have no control of it, and that's the purpose too. It's to communicate your vision and perceptions of the world through whatever chosen medium.
Right.
But then once you put it out, it's not up to you. So what do you hope an audience that comes to TSL and Hudson takes away from the show, or what would you like them to experience when they're, once everything's up and curated and nicely installed, how do you want them to feel? Ideally, obviously you can't change the actual results and how people feel and control that, but what would you like people to experience when they see all your, the culmination of 3 years' work in one space?
I'd like them to get an emotional response. Okay. Whether it's, you know, they might feel disgust, right? That's fine if they do. As I said before, I hope they can pull something out of it that they can really connect to. Like, that makes me feel about this time in my life, or that looks like something that they know about but maybe can't put their finger on. I want them to feel like they are, especially the big ones, that they are inside that work and that takes them into a place.
Hmm. In their own place, one would say, or is it your world you've kind of
I want them to be able to create their own place that it is. When I talk to people about my work, I hear them say, well, I see this or that, and they're like, is that what you were going for? And I was like, not specifically, but the fact that you think that, I think that that's the goal.
Interesting. Now, why now? How long did it? Why at this point to show this this breadth of work in this venue? And how long did it take to kind of produce and plan and then finally get to this hard date?
Well, I think why now is because I got the opportunity. And I want to thank TSL and Linda and Claudia for giving me that opportunity to show my work there. I've been building it up for 3 years, so I feel that there's enough work where, you know, it could be seen. They have a lot of space, so it's a real great opportunity to show the larger work, like I said, that I can't really show anywhere. It's about the opportunity, and the time is now. Is I took time off to focus on my art career, and I have, you know, I've been working and I've been participating in shows, and you know, it's just another step in the process.
Of course. What would you see this as, like a mid-career kind of mini retrospective, or how do you see this as a milestone in your artist career?
I think it's a good, I can't say mid-career, I mean age-wise I might be mid, but you know, I can't say it's my mid-career. I think it's a good jump off point. You know, I hope it leads to more, you know.
That's true. I forget the path of artists at this stage it's still early career, one would say, correct? Would you consider your stuff early career, or?
Yeah, although I've been painting for a long time, I think the style I've honed in on, it would be kind of my early career.
Yeah. And have you shown the bigger pieces elsewhere, or have they been in public, I guess, one would ask?
I've had some fairly large pieces shown before, group art shows. I had a large piece hanging in the window at Hudson Hall over a winter walk. I had a show last fall at Arbor Gallery in Carmel, and there was some significantly large pieces, but not to the scale of what you'll see at TSL.
Nice. So why should people go out and see your stuff? I know, well, I'm hitting. I'm asking a little loaded question here.
I think that if you like to see art and you like to experience it and you want to see something that's expressive and is loaded with emotion, then you should go check it out. I mean, it's always nice to see variety. And I mean, if you're an art lover, you should check it out. If you're not, you should check it out too, just to experience it.
Oh, I agree. I mean, I think everybody should go and check out art, no matter. But that's not up to me. Speaking of emotion, where does this stem from? Where's this need to create this breadth of work stem from? Like, where does your emotional prowess come from and that need to constantly create, particularly on this scale?
Well, I think I mentioned earlier that I've always been into creating art, so it's like second nature for me. Always doing it, always getting my hands on something, you know, whether you're in class, if I was in a regular class, I'm always doodling on the paper.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's always what I am looking to do, on my when I have time to myself. So, but where does the emotional aspect come from? I mean,
we're humans, right? I mean, we all have experiences throughout life that will drive our perception of life. And of course, we've all had to deal with obstacles and stuff like that. I'm not trying to be all psychological on you, even though that may be a new show of just art therapy. But I'm really like curious, like, is it like a need or calling or a longing that you're expressing into your art that you may not have fulfilled within your subconscious self or your soul? Or the emotional aspect behind your process, because I know where my stuff comes from, you know, and some of my experiments are just raw emotion from external frustrations at time. And yeah, I don't try to be good. It's just healing process through and getting that need from my subconscious self or soul to the canvas or paper or whatever. I was just curious what emotional or like element is tied to your work in expression.
I think it's energy. You know, I'm a person who's active, so I've always been into sports or, you know, just moving my body. So I think with art, it holds a similar fashion where, like, you want to take that energy out of your body and it's being put on canvas. It hasn't always been like that. Like, I could sit down and do, you know, a very technical painting and a picture, but the process is totally different.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I do enjoy that. I do respect that. I like that. But my creative outlet, that's what I want to do. I want to kind of detach from thinking too much and just apply.
Yeah. Just like, you know, pure creation without thinking, you know, just.
And that gets tough because once you build things up, you think about, and if you come to the show, you'll see this. I start to tighten things up and I apply a little more technique. And so there's various stages of how the works go. And like I mentioned, they all start similar, but they could end differently. They start with mark making. It's intuitive. It's feeling out the space, and it builds that initial composition. From there, I really just fill in spaces and go by, you know, what I'm feeling, and also not overthinking. Some of the pieces end there. You know, some of the pieces end there, and, you know, it's the funny thing about art is, like, you feel like you need to put all this time into a piece to make it good. And so I've ruined some pieces too by going back into it and being like, oh, I gotta fine tune it. I gotta do something. I gotta put more time into this, so you know, it's better for. And then in that aspect, you're thinking about other people, how a viewer might see it, and it's tough. It's tough to stay true to yourself and the way you create. And that's what I try to do with those big pieces.
Well, that's a good point, too. Like, thank you for that. And thank you for sharing some of your process and inside that process. Because, yeah, it's always fascinating to learn where it stems from in your process and that energy that translates or transfers to the canvas. I had something on my mind, too. I had something good. But let's see, Phil. I had something.
Well, if you want me to get into, I mean, I was thinking about it too, just about the tightening up aspect. Is these compositions, I start to see things, and usually they become figures, okay? Or if they're in a landscape format, they start to develop some type of landscape look to it. And I think those things come from the traditional ways we are taught about art and art that we see. So as some of my stuff is very abstract or loose, some of the compositions are traditional, and let's just maybe in some way a classical composition of a portrait of somebody sitting at a desk, which you can see in some of my stuff. But I did not aim to show a particular person.
Yeah. Thus the title Beyond Form, one would assume.
Yeah, there we go.
I wrapping back to what was on my tip of my tongue, how do you like stick with your authenticity when you have once you start putting out work, you get there's obviously critical feedback and public feedback and feedback from persons within the industry, et cetera, et cetera. How do you stick with your pure vision, your authenticity, in your process, in your work, and not allow external feedback to influence that?
Yeah, and that's a really good question, and I think it is difficult to stick to that. It certainly has affected me before, where you feel this need to maybe push your work in a certain direction because maybe not because of a critical feedback, but maybe because there was some success in it. You're like, oh, I better do more of that. And then what happens is when you try too hard, you end up with stuff you're not happy with, and you kind of hit a wall. So I think it goes back to sometimes you need a break. And you need to start fresh, and you got to block that stuff out and start. What I like to do is create multiple things at one time. I like to get some blank canvases pinned around, ready to go, and I kind of work on three of them at once, and I start to let things go. And it's not always a fun time, right? It could be a complete struggle. You could hate it. You're like, you know, you're kind of cursing yourself the whole time you're doing it. And then when you step back, you know, you see the substance there, and, you know, that drives you forward. I think working through those roadblocks is what keeps you true.
Yeah.
And like I said, it's not easy, but that's that creative process. That's that we all have creativity inside of us. It's just letting it go. And you let it go by not worrying about what's going to come out.
Yeah, I'm in line with that. It's been a process on my end too to figure out a flow because I tend to get in my own way as well. Is there any external things where you do to get influence? Step outside the studio, maybe go to a museum, travel, or what do you do to kind of maybe get out of that like I must produce mode to like open it up to the a bigger world, so you may find influence elsewhere.
Yeah, I think anytime you can go look at art in a museum, it's beneficial because you could see all these different styles, and it kind of reminds you, oh, I don't need to do that. I don't need to stick to this. So that's important. But I think, you know, taking a break, getting outside, getting out in nature is always a big influence and reprieve for me. It kind of goes hand in hand with some of those large landscapes where you're entering that realm.
Yeah. And where do you go around here?
Yeah. I mean, there's so many places to go.
Since I'm fairly new to the Hudson Catskill area, where does one go hiking or just find influence in nature?
I mean, would you like the list?
Not a list, yeah. Just a few spots you go to. I don't need like a tourism guide.
Because I'm working on a small list for folks.
Oh, are you?
No, there's many places to go. You have Olana right over here,
yeah.
Which can be influential in its own way because you have, Frederick Church's home. Hmm. But, you know, aside from that, gorgeous landscapes, what other places are there? You know, there's a conservation areas in Hudson.
Said you had a list.
I do. I'm
prodding you. I'm prodding you. I got you. Go ahead. Flow with it.
Well, here's your list. You have High Falls. You have the conservation area in Hudson. You have Wandarma. You have Olana. You could head over to a few places in Catskill. One place I really like to go to is Catterskill Falls. It's just very dramatic and intense. And also, you know, depending on how many people are there, it could be very peaceful.
Yeah.
Which can be tricky.
Finding that soul spot where nobody's there. Have you found that spot? You don't have to tell our listeners, but obviously we don't want to, you know, if you have a place of peace and solitude, I wouldn't want to attract people there, but I'm just curious if you found that one spot where you're like, this is where I go to kind of meditate or reflect and find influence from the natural environment.
No place specific.
Yeah.
I just think of, you know, any of those places, if you could find some time for yourself and you can connect with nature, I think that that's it right there.
And then, like, so whenever you hit a creative block, how long is that period, I guess? Like, maybe that's just a...
I don't have a timetable for you.
There's never a timetable. There's different periods of one's process that you're like, now I feel the flow and I go at it again on the canvas or whatever creative project you're working towards. Maybe that's not quite the question I should ask, I guess. But I was just curious. There's always ebbs and flows in processes, and you can't really mark it down and like, oh, this is when I'm going to end this kind of ebb, and now I'm going to flow. So I guess I was just like, I don't know. I'm just asking about the processes within itself and your process, but in energy flows, I guess, and that translates to the canvas.
Well, speaking about, like, how long does, like, a block last, I mean, it could be a month. It could feel like a month. It could be longer. It could be less.
Yeah.
I think understanding that ebb and flow and trusting it, you know you can come out of it. And I think you come out of it just by working.
Yeah.
And, something for me that can be difficult is when you're surrounded by all your work in the studio, you're constantly looking at it, so it could influence the next thing. And I find that you need to get that stuff away from you and start fresh.
Yeah.
So you're not trying to duplicate something that you've already done.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. Like having that clean space or canvas or somewhere, just go different work environment without any influential pieces or, you know, old experiments or older sketches or anything else, and just look at something or space in a newer or just fresh set of, fresh perspective without any clutter really is beneficial. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, and, you know, switching it up. I mean, take a sketchbook somewhere, sit down, make some sketches, or I like to travel with watercolor paints. So you could stay active.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Just create.
So would you, now, Phil, with, this show, wrapping back to the show at TSL,
sure,
and Beyond Form, I guess, where do you go from here? Like, what do you see yourself or your breadth of work expanding to? I know it's hard to project any future developments and work, and but I guess, like, more on the hopes and vision for yourself and artistic practice, where do you see it evolving from here at this point? And this is prior to the show and not actually having it out in the public yet, but I'm just curious in the longer run, where do you see this breath work going or your work in practice going?
Well, I just keep on building upon it. You know, the goal is to get exposure. So hopefully this show leads to more exposure. And, you know, after the show, I could kind of inform you how that went. You know, everybody likes representation. So, I mean, gallery representation would be amazing. And I think that comes with, you know, getting your work out there and participating in shows and getting those solo shows and that exposure.
Would you show anything completely different off your standard developed visual language? Would you just go completely opposite one time for experimental purposes?
Well, this is a great question, and I think I have a good answer for you. First, I do like to work on some side projects sometimes that are very technique driven, because I am enamored by high fine art, the technique, the precision, the realism. So once in a while, I'll take my time and, you know, mix my paints and lay down my layers and work from a source. So I'll do that. But second part to this is, I do have a little side project I've been working on that is different scenes from Hudson, where I started with a source, but and a reference, and then I went away from it. So I'll look at the picture, and I won't try to make it so precise. I will just like a blind contour almost. I'll draw out the bones of the picture, and then I will fill it in, similar to I would with an abstract piece that has no reference.
Hmm.
And so I have, and I haven't even told you this yet, is I have two of those pieces are going to be on display at a place called Bank Gallery in Newburgh.
Hmm.
And they're going to be showing two of my Hudson City inspired pieces.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. When did this come to fruition?
You know, this came out of nowhere. They actually reached out to me, so I thank them a lot for that. And they said, "Do you want to participate in this?" And I, you know, they knew I was doing a show at TSL, so they looked at some of my available works, and they chose to go that route. And, you know, I'm excited about that because I really want people to see those.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. And when's that?
That is, I think, mid-June, and it runs to the beginning of August. So
nice.
It's going to be a pretty busy June.
And how big are those pieces again? I'm just curious.
Yeah, off the top of my head, I think one is about 34 inches high by like 28, and then the other is about 50 inches wide by 38 inches tall. That one's a little bit larger.
Yeah, yeah, interesting. And now, just a more wider question. I will step away from the technicalities of pieces and in your practice to overarching question of, like, why stay in New York? I know you're born and bred in New York, New Yorker.
That's right.
Why stay in the Hudson Valley area? And why not go out and try a different scene? And why? What makes it so unique to stay around here as an artist, a visual artist, or
I was in New York City for quite some time, well, short period of time, and actually did go out west for a year.
Oh,
and experienced,
I didn't know that. Yeah.
Experienced that lifestyle a little bit, and my partner and I at the time decided to move back east, and both from the Hudson Valley region.
Yeah.
And felt comfortable there, you know, and we felt that, like, Hudson area really offered that city vibe. It had an art scene, a budding art scene going on, and then also you have the ability to get outdoors and do stuff too.
Yeah.
With the Catskill Mountains nearby and all of the lovely hiking spots that I struggled to tell you about.
Yeah. That's true. That's true. Where out west, if I may ask?
That'd be Colorado.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Cool. I've always like explored the idea of going out there, or Arizona or Cali, but yeah, I guess I'm a Northeast guy myself.
Well, you know, it's also interesting. You mentioned Arizona, and I actually grew up spending a month out of the summer in Colorado.
Yeah.
In a very rural area, with no electricity and no running water.
Really?
Yeah. So it was quite the experience. And so you really do get immersed in that landscape. So, and I've spent some time in Southwest Colorado, poked around in Utah and Arizona. And, you know, I do think some of my work is influenced by that. You might be able to see some of that. That landscape and that, those tones and those hues that are there.
And when was that? What period was that in your life in Colorado?
From birth till about 13, 14 years old, my family would go out there for a month.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, so like in summers, or is that like summer?
Yeah, that would be that would be the July.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's funny because like how our childhood like vacations influence our kind of even practices now. Because I myself, not to detract away from your story and your work, but I'm always influenced by my time spent in Cape Cod in the summers up till 13. You know. Mm-hmm. And I have this call for the ocean constantly still. That influences me greatly in the subconscious, you know. So it's interesting to have those your experiences when you're younger, traveling or just vacationing for wherever location, how it does greatly influence yourself now as a adult and particularly a artist. That taps into your child self, which ideally artists try to do, right?
Like, sure.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, you mentioned the ocean. I mean, I also love the ocean. I wish I could spend more time there, but I also find that, you know, really inspiring and calming and a great place to create.
Well, it's like looking out over that horizon, that void, you're like, I look out over, say, the horizon of the ocean. You're like, what's out there? You know, you just imagine the larger world for me. This, you know, and that line that the traditional horizon right over there. You're like, you know, I just start thinking on a larger scale outside yourself.
Sure.
I'm curious. What's your experience like that? Or do you just kind of like sit there and like overlook the horizon too? Or
are we getting into some flat Earth stuff?
No, I'm not.
No. I'm just kidding.
That's a different topic.
No, I'm just playing around.
Yeah. Well, you can clearly see the curvature. Is it a straight line in the horizon?
I think that it's that peacefulness to it. I think the sound of the water, the cadence of it, you know, the feel of the sand. It's a nice connection.
Yeah. I've through my experiences the last almost nearly a decade now of seriously pursuing my creative craft, I've found it's been, and this has been a surprise to me, because I never expected it, kind of like a holistic spiritual process too, not like on a religious sense, but getting in tune with my inner self and having to address stuff I never expected to and face to then move forward and produce better stuff, you know? And that's, on my end, I've grown, I guess, through this process of trying to pursue art in a serious manner. One has to deconstruct to reconstruct.
Sure. I mean, I think when you say producing art in a serious manner, because that could get intimidating, right?
Oh, that's true. That's
no, and I mean, you might question yourself: Am I being serious enough to make something substantial.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think sometimes that's just you psych yourself out with that, and you just gotta go, and you gotta, you know, you're allowed, you're allowed to do this, to be creative, yeah. And you just gotta put it out there.
Well, we're wrapping. We have 5 minutes left on air for your first interview, live on air. Welcome to the broadcast world, Phil.
Thank you.
So I guess just to wrap, I always like to ask this question from accomplished artisans and creators and musicians, producers, whomever. Any advice to younger artisans out there, like, that want to actually pursue putting their work out there, and any lessons learned from the trials and errors?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I say former art educator, but I feel like I'm always will be an art educator. I taught for 15 years from, little kids to high school kids. And so I just think that trusting yourself and pushing through those mistakes is really, you could see some results. You can't, it's easy to get discouraged, and you gotta let that fall to the side. Because it's hard to find a way if you're going to restrict yourself. Okay. But if you're going to get after it and try different things, you can make a mess, 100 times. But one of those times you might find something that clicks, and then you can get into it, and the results can be amazing.
Yeah. What I feel like, and this could have been like the whole topic for this hour, that a lot of society kind of pushes that away and doesn't encourage kids to pursue art, as a career, I guess.
Right. And that might be because, the difficulty of it, but even if they aren't going to pursue it as a career, having it part of your life, I think, is vital, because we all have this innate creativity, and if you're not using it, it's really a shame. And so many people feel like, oh well, I'm not an artist, I can't do that, or like the old one, I can't draw a stick figure. I mean, it's just not true.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You can do a lot. You just have to do it without judging yourself while you do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of the process is getting over these internal barriers of I can't, or not even internal, external barriers as well, from friends, family, et cetera, school systems, whatever systems you find yourself in growing up. It's breaking beyond that, in trusting intuitively, this is who I am as an artist. It may take time. You have to go out, explore, and discover who you are as a human, and as yourself and your identity. So thank you for that, man. And again, just to wrap, TSL, June 28th is the opening for
Beyond Form.
Beyond Form, sorry.
That's okay.
And any tidbits for prospective visitors to the show, or what should they be excited about? And we have about a minute left.
I think they should be excited to see, like I said, some pieces that they can be immersed in. They're going to see some different styles, but also driven from the same thing.
Thank you, Phil, for that. And thank you for the conversation. It was wonderful.
Thank you, Rob.
And exploring your first interview on air. And please, any listeners, go check out some art. And also, the intro was by my friend Walter ETC out in L.A. As always, I'd like to give him credit for the little jingle that is Uncontaminated Sound. So thank you all, and have a wonderful day.